You're listening to episode 296 of Women Worldwide. Are you a member of a professional association? And if you are, how much does the organization empower you? And are you investing in the resources that are available? I've got a guest today who has a lot to share on this topic, so stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Thank you for tuning in and for showing up. We appreciate you, all of the sharing that you're doing, the sharing of the shows, and the sharing of how you feel, which helps us to deliver the guests every single week who can bring you the motivation, the inspiration, and also help you with those challenges. So let's get to today's topic and special guest. The topic is empowering women through the professional association. So I ask you, how many of you are members of a professional association? And how much time are you investing in that membership? And how much is the association investing in you? Well, that is the perfect segue to my special guest. Joining me on the show is Joel Stern. And Joel is the CEO of a nonprofit called NAMWOLF, which stands for the National Association of Minority and Women-Owned Law Firms. Now, Joel, before NAMWOLF, spent 25 years as in-house legal counsel at major corporations. So I could go on and on. There is a list of accolades, and he's got a long CV. But I think it's better that he jumps in to share his insights and his advice with you. So, Joel, it's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here today.
Well, let's just dive right in. So, of course, the first question is always, what made you decide to be a lawyer and to be in-house counsel? So tell us just a little bit about that journey.
Well, I assume you want the truth, so I'll be a little bit self-deprecating. Growing up, okay. I always wanted to be a physician. Math and science has always gotten away. So I decided to become a lawyer, and I decided to become a lawyer for really the primary reason is I always wanted to be in a position where I could effectuate positive change and be a leader. And the answers weren't black and white. So I graduated from law school. I thought I was going to be a medical malpractice attorney in Cleveland, Ohio. But then Allstate Insurance Company in Chicago offered me a summer internship. So I went to Chicago. I fell in love with the city, and I was in-house counsel for my entire career up until taking this position at NAMWOLF.
Awesome. So, you know, being an in-house counsel is so different, I would think, than pivoting to be the CEO of a nonprofit. So why that pivot? What made you decide to move?
It's a great question. So I accomplished everything I wanted to as in-house counsel. I achieved what I wanted to achieve. I think I made a difference in not only the companies that I represented, but the people that I had the privilege of leading. But I've always had a passion for diversity and inclusion. And when I fell in love with NAMWOLF back in 2004, when I brought them into Accenture and watched them grow from three law firms to almost 200 and three or four corporations to hundreds of some of the biggest and most well-known corporations across the globe. And in 2014, when they were looking for another CEO, I had to take it because I wanted to end my career making a difference in something that is so passionate to me.
That's amazing. So you were actually at Accenture when you were introduced to them, and then that passion led you to where you are now. So, I mean, with so many women, and I mentioned the professional association, how does NAMWOLF help minority and women-owned law firms? What are you actually doing for them?
Well, our mission and vision is all about diversity and inclusion, but with a razor-like focus on supplier diversity, which is all the incredible talent that was at big law that left big law for a myriad of reasons. Right. Some, by the way, involve women not being treated equally in the profession.
Yes.
And they either left the practice altogether, they went in-house, which is great, or they had the entrepreneurial courage to start their own law firms. NAMLF is all about brokering introductions between these incredible law firms and Fortune 500 corporations. So think of NAMLF as a gourmet kitchen. Mm-hmm. And the delicacies are all these incredible women and minority-owned law firms. And the buyers slash chefs are the corporations. We create that introduction for these firms to not only get interviewed, but to get business.
I love the way that you explain that. And as a part of, you know, associations in general, so I've been a member of an association for a very long time. It's really, it's a marriage in a sense. It's what you put into that relationship. Are you finding that the women who are part of NAMLF are investing as much time as you're investing in them?
100% So it only works if the investment is mutual. And they know that they may get in the door in today's environment because they're women and or minorities, but they're only going to get the business if the level of quality and value they provide is equal to or even exceeds what you could get from Big Law. They are amazing investors, not only in their law firm, but in our mission and vision. They cross market with each other. They help get people up to the next level. They mentor each other. They promote each other as well as the entity. It really is a symbiotic relationship.
That's wonderful. I mean, and also the note of promoting each other. So sometimes you hear these stories, and I don't know if you've heard them, but where, you know, women, we're all in this together and we're in this together with men, but you often learn that there's not as much lifting as you would expect. So what do you say to that? What do you say to women to lift one another up, and how important is that?
It's a critical piece of the solution. Women have to lift each other up, and men have to also help lift each other up, because without men, you have affinity groups. And I love affinity groups, and they're so critically important. But a personal opinion is I'm not sure affinity groups solve. You need the male and the white male specifically as part of the solution.
Right.
Sometimes you hear, and I've heard it in the medical profession, I hear it in the legal profession, well, here's what I had to go through. Here's all the things that I had to combat and put up with. And therefore, you need to put up with that. We have to stop that. Women and men need to help women basically move up, but the way that they should have moved up for hundreds of years. So I believe women are a big piece of the solution. And what I love about your organization, because the way that I grew up learning about leadership, it's all about leaders teaching leaders. And I love this notion of teachable point of views, where women take what they're really good at, whether it's time management, whether it's raising a child and also doing great at work, whether it's leadership, and developing their own stories and sharing them with other women. So we learn and we get better. And that's a critical piece of the puzzle.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm so glad that you're sharing and discussing this, because it is a critical piece of the puzzle. What do you think, if you could pinpoint some of the specific challenges that you've seen, because you did mention a lot of great talent leaves the big law firms and then they go out on their own, which that is entrepreneurial courage. But what do you think specifically happens? What are those challenges, and what makes maybe somebody is not necessarily able to start their own business, but yet they just go to another law firm? What do you see out there, and what advice can you give?
Well, there's so many obstacles that women specifically have in big law today. Number one, many men don't understand the concept of privilege. And the importance of privilege is relating to the fact that if we know that for reasons that have nothing to do with what we did, we as males have a step up on women. It allows us to then say, we don't want a woman to get the position or to do well because she's a woman, but we want to put her on equal footing.
Right.
And I think critically important is for males to understand the concept of privilege. Number two is the concept of implicit bias. Males and all of us have to understand we all have unconscious biases. If we don't take steps to understand what they are, we are trying to convince the racists and the misogynists to do differently rather than the people that should be doing differently, but they don't know that they're not doing the right thing. Their brain is coming to conclusions before they're aware of it. In the legal profession, another issue is this origination credit concept, that women will not be treated equally and be compensated fairly if white males are getting credit for business that was brought into the firm 30 years ago, when it's the woman that is the annuity stream. It's the woman that's doing the work and is the reason that I, the buyer of legal services, is doing business with them. The other issue that law firms have is that we focus so much on acquiring talent and very little time on how to retain the talent and promote the talent. When you look at the analytics in the legal profession, women look pretty good when you look at the entering class into a law firm. They're 50% like they are in law school. But as they move on throughout their career, those numbers get smaller and smaller. And equity partners at law firms, it's like 22% women. So law firms, the biggest obstacle is, how do we not only retain women, but put them in positions to be promoted and treated equally?
Absolutely. And you're getting a younger generation of women too. So that should be very interesting for law firms, especially if it's running under an older structure, let's say, to, you might attract the talent, but how are they possibly going to keep that talent if they're not promoting and working within and working with these professionals?
Law firms, like many other professions, always talk about the metrics, but they very rarely talk about how we embrace those metrics. And diversity without inclusion is not the solution. So I always ask law firms, don't tell me what your entering class is. Show me what that class looks like at 3, 5, 7, 10 years, 12 years down the line. Right. If you can show me a law firm that has the same unmanaged attrition for the white male as it does women and or minorities, that law firm has figured it out. I haven't found a firm of any size that's been able to tell me that. And the irony here also is, you would think lawyers, they're professionals, they're educated, they're self-aware, that we would be better. But our profession, my profession, is dead last with respect to the hiring and retaining of minorities and women. And that is a problem, because remember I told you, I became a lawyer to effectuate change, to be a leader. So we have some major problems in our profession that we have to tackle.
So what can you, so whether it's law firms or other B2B, maybe it's accounting, maybe it's engineering, who are more set in ways, or, I mean, all of you say you're aware and want to effectuate change. What do you say to make that happen? How can somebody become even more aware for the younger professionals coming in?
Well, I'm very solution.
That's a hard question.
And I love it. And I get asked it all the time. And by the way, my background is legal, but a lot of this is transferable to other professions as well. Number one, enlist men to be part of the solution. That is a critical component. Yes, women organizations are fantastic and keep doing the great things. But in the end, to solve, I think you need everybody. That is inclusion. Number two, as we talked about before, admire each other and lift each other up. Mm-hmm. Number three, mentor. Every woman, and by the way, every male should be a mentor. Mentor above and mentor below and mentor at your level. As I said before, share your stories. And that's so critically important. And again, what your organization is doing is so important. Get rid of the mentality, I did it, therefore you have to do it. I see that way too much. And then don't let diversity fatigue be an excuse. You know, I've been in this profession for 30 plus years, and we've had so many calls to action to provide an equal playing field for women. And a lot of those calls to actions are bluster, and they're calls without action. And a lot of people, both women and males, get tired of it. But I always tell people, I'm not a marathon runner, but I understand marathon runners in mile 19 get fatigued. They don't stop running. I do play tennis. And I get fatigued, and the older I get, I surely get more fatigued. I don't give up. I figure out what I need to do to finish the race. We cannot allow fatigue to be an excuse to not do more with respect to fighting for equality for women.
Absolutely. I mean, you've given a lot of great points and advice, Joel. On the note of mentoring, somebody asked me once, so I'm going to ask you, how do you know when you should become a mentor? So what do you say to that question?
Well, I always tell people, why is mentorship so important to me? And I always have to admit, it's so important to me because I never had one. A year and a half into my first job, my boss was the general counsel of a Fortune 50 corporation.
Right.
And I was so unimportant to him, and I understood it, that I never had a mentor. I made so many mistakes, and I had nobody to talk to except the line people that I reported to. So very early on, I recognized that the lack of mentorship is so important that I have to become better at it. There is no time not to be a mentor. And I always love the fact when people say, I'm afraid to ask somebody to be a mentor. I said, I've never, ever heard anybody say no to that request. But the more challenging question is, who should be my mentor? You know, should it be somebody who looks like me, who acts like me, who is of the same race or ethnicity or gender or sexual orientation? The answer is yes, yes, and yes. You should have a female mentor. You should have a male mentor. You should have a minority mentor. I'm not a believer in one mentor. I think you have lots of different mentors that help you from different perspectives. But there is no time in anybody's career not to have people. I mentor 15-year-olds. I mentor African-Americans at HBCU law schools. I mentor, hopefully, my daughters and my friends. And I get mentoring. So I just think it's something that has to be baked into our DNA. We should be doing it each and every day. Now, today, my focus is clearly on women and or minorities.
Right. And I'm sure there's a lot of mentoring going on within your nonprofit organization. I mean, I can imagine. So with here's just a challenge question. With COVID, right, so we're in the middle of a global pandemic, how has that changed the way that the association networks or mentors or people aren't, I'm sure, allowed to meet or this year for an in-person conference? How are you guys managing that?
That's a great question. We have an annual meeting each year, and I made the decision with the board that early in April, we decided to go virtual in September. And we didn't cry about it. We took it as a challenge. And by the way, we doubled the size of our attendance.
Oh,
we
fantastic.
We scheduled over 1,300 individual interviews between our firms and corporations. We had Senator Tammy Duckworth speak. We had a general counsel panel. And people are telling us it was the best meeting ever and our brand increases. Another thing, and again, it's to find that silver lining. I do a CLE for corporations, and I used to do it maybe one or two times a month because I had to fly out and do it.
Right.
Now I'm doing it virtually, and I've done it 60 or 70 times the last two or three months. So I'm doing it three or four times a week.
Oh, my gosh.
So we have turned COVID into an opportunity to expand NAMLF's brand, to expand the firm's brand, and to get more corporations excited about it. I was very concerned when COVID first hit that we would be in the same situation we were in post-Great Recession in 2010.
Right.
If you look at the numbers in the legal profession, again, I'm guessing they're transferable outside the legal profession, that we made some incremental improvements with respect to women.
Right.
From 2000 to 2010. And then we all took our eye off the ball with respect to D&I, and the metrics went backwards. They regressed. And I was fearful that with COVID, we'd make the same mistakes. But because of social media, because of our ability to adapt to a virtual environment, I would suggest to you our brand has increased exponentially this year than it has in previous years. So we took it on as a challenge, and I think we hit it out of the park.
I think taking it on as a challenge is a really good way to navigate and approach what's going on. And you must have a lot of the ability to be flexible and adaptable, which is really, really good for an organization today. So, you know, now I'm going to flip it more personal, Joel. So how do you manage everything? Because I know you have a family life. You are the CEO of NAMLF. Are you able to take the time and balance or blend? Do you have stress? How do you cope with it?
So many questions. We should ask my therapist these questions. it's interesting. The older I get, I think I'm able to manage stress more because I love mantras. I love quotes, and I develop my own mantras. And, you know, a couple of them are, you know, it's time to stop admiring the problems we have and find the solutions. And I find that as a stress reducer. One of my favorites is life is very precious and very short. And the older I get, the more I appreciate that. So I try not to get bothered about the little things. I do love to play tennis. I do love watching my three daughters that all live within 20 minutes of us and are doing incredible things. I now have my grandson that we have at our house twice a week. So I think family keeps me in line. The other thing that's a really interesting question is, does working from home increase or decrease productivity? And the reality is, for 90% of us, it increases productivity. The more challenging issue is, how do we not burn people out? So I love listening to people's stories, but also giving my perspective on how to achieve more work-life balance than you thought was possible. And I don't get frustrated with, I got to catch that 5 o'clock train to get home because I'm working from home.
Exactly.
And I have more time during the day to do the things that I couldn't do. So for me, I find there's less stress working from home and I'm more productive. And I think my entire team thinks so as well for them.
That's really good. Yeah, I find that working from home, and I was working from home even before the pandemic, but I do know that, like you said, you can be more productive, but you don't want to get burned out because sometimes it just, you can keep going. I actually carve out everything on my calendar that basically now says stop. It's time to prep for dinner. My husband and I, we step away for a while. We make sure I'm the sous chef. He's the chef. And then we always navigate back to work if we need to later in the evening. But yeah, so burnout, definitely we want to avoid. Okay, Joel, I can't even believe it. We're getting to that question where I ask you about just some parting advice to give to the Women Worldwide Network. What do you want to tell everybody?
Wow, so much. Number one, keep fighting. This is so important. And it's not only important for you, but it's important for the generation behind you. My wife and I, before we got married, said we were going to have three daughters, and we had three daughters. And my only goal back then was to make sure that they were put in a position where they were treated on the merits. And now I find myself worried about all the people that I've had the privilege of working with and all the other generations to come. Number two is, there's nothing more important than fighting for equality in our society and whatever profession we're at. So don't ever deprioritize that. And then finally, my favorite quote is Mahatma Gandhi's, become the change you wish to see in the world and it will happen. And when I tell people, for me personally, and I do love sharing stories, I always thought I said the right thing for the most part, I did the right things. I wrote the right checks. I voted the right way in my mind. But the world wasn't changing. And then I took this position. And I realized that, and again, I'm not asking anybody to give up their day jobs and become 24/7 nonprofit relating to diversity and inclusion. But if you really want to change the world in which we live in, we have to become the change. And we have to focus on this subject every hour of every day. It has to become just the norm for all of us. It can't be philanthropy. It can't be a hobby. It can't be a nice to have. So for women and really everybody, become that change you want to see, and it has a much more likely chance of happening.
That is powerful. Keep fighting and become the change. Awesome. Joel, where can people find out more about you and NamWolf?
Well, it's easy. If you're looking for me in a positive way, it's joel_stern@namwolf.org. Our website is namwolf.org. I always tell people you can find me on LinkedIn. It's always professional. Twitter, it rarely is professional, and Facebook is a combination, but LinkedIn is the best place to find me. And thank you so much, Deirdre, for doing all the great things that you're doing. Your organization is so important.
Thank you, Joel. It was such a pleasure to have you on my show. Thank you for enlightening us, for your time, your advice, and all of your insights. We really appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you.
And to all of you, thank you for tuning in, for being here, and like I said, for sharing. And always, if you want to receive the weekly updates, you can go to the womenworldwideshow.com website and subscribe there. And you can also catch us on YouTube. So subscribe to the Deirdre Breckenridge channel too, and you'll see guests like Joel and other inspiring professionals. Okay, friends, until our next episode, be well, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.